Hello and welcome to A Vague Idea. This is a comedy trivia podcast. I'm Nate Regolia. Each week, we subject our guests to a list of topics to find out if they have a vague idea. This week, we're joined by one returning guest, a real vague idea all-star, legacy champion, super fibber. Bryce Mayoro is back on the show. Bryce, welcome back.
Oh, thank you. Thrilled to be a super fibber.
Yeah. I mean, of all the superpowers to have, it's a pretty good one. Because fibbing's fun and sweet and not too much trouble, hopefully. And joining us for the first time ever, you are one of the, you're both founders of the Howl at 8 o'clock Facebook phenomenon that people all over the country participated in, and all over the world, I think, right?
Yeah, that's right. We got like 100 different countries represented on the page at one point.
Right on. And only a few incidences of horrible internet behavior that I noticed. Oh. So that's really good.
An overflowing, a plethora of shenanigans on that page.
That's what people need. Chelsea Ochoa is our new guest this week. Thank you for being on the show, Chelsea.
My pleasure. I love a good game show.
All right. Well, good. Then you're in for maybe a good game show. I can't promise anything. It's just a podcast, but we'll do our best. So we're just going to start out. This episode is going to be about howling, because in honor of you guys starting the Howl at 8 o'clock, we're going to do an episode about howling.
Careful what you ask for, I guess.
And of course, dogs are going to bark in the background. So that's good. With a little pause, I can cut it out. So we're going to open up on just the random opening questions. So my first question for both of you, I will start with you, Chelsea, is do you have a vague idea what I ate for lunch today? And the best answer is going to get the most points.
Yeah, I know what you had for lunch today. Obviously, your dogs are so attracted to you right now, and I can hear them barking, because you had lengua tacos for lunch. Ooh. And everyone knows that that is the dog's favorite food. And so you probably had lengua tacos, you had some horchata, and you poured the horchata all over the lengua tacos, and it was a sloppy mess, and you started pulling it apart, and you only got to eat like 20% of your own tacos, because the dogs got to it first.
Great. Very, very good. Bryce, what did I eat for lunch today?
I'm thinking that you just had some Santita's tortilla chips.
You snuck a peek.
I had a visual hint. And maybe with some salsa and, let's see. What does Nate Regolia eat for lunch?
He's got glowing skin. I feel like he's pretty healthy.
I'm backlit. It's giving the illusion of health.
A kale salad with lettuce dressing and fresh veggies straight from a garden.
Wow. Very good. You're both wrong. I had nothing for lunch, really. I mean, the closest thing is what Bryce said, which is those chips. We had French toast around 10 in the morning, and I have not eaten since, beyond a handful of chips. Great job, though.
Take care of yourself,
girl,
mate.
Just getting in the rhythm of working too much. Chelsea, 3 points. Great job. Bryce, 2 points. And we're going to move on to round one.
I'll calm down. It's just round one.
I really enjoyed the disgusting slurry of tacos and horchata that you wrote in evocative language. So for round one, Bryce, we're going to start with you. Do you have a vague idea about the howling?
That's a very big question.
The howling. I do have a vague idea about the howling.
Great.
The howling is... I'm not sure if it's the one you're referencing, but it is how a lot of newspapers referred to the howling that was going on around the country.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, there was an Associated Press interview that was distributed to a lot of different places, so a lot of the articles had the headline, "The Howling." From my knowledge, the howling is a reference to the Go Outside and Howl at 8 movement, where people were going outside and howling at 8 every night.
All right, that's a good plug, but it's not necessarily correct. Chelsea, the howling. Do you have a vague idea about what that is?
Yes, Everybody knows The Howling is episode 52 of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the one where she gets into a fight with the guy that she has a crush on at her school, but then she has to let off some steam. She's like stabbing people left and right. All those fan kicks that she does, you know, couple backflips, The Howling.
All right, great. Also not correct, but I love both of your answers.
I thought she had it.
It was very convincing, right? She must have gone to your fibbing school. The Howling is a 1981 American horror film. It's a werewolf movie directed by Joe Dante. It stars Dee Wallace, Patrick Macnee, Dennis Dugan, and Robert Picardo, and it's based on the novel of the same name by Gary Brandner, and it follows a television newswoman sent to a remote mountain resort after a near-fatal incident with a serial killer, unaware that all of the residents are werewolves. It's a really good movie. It's one of those early, like, practical effects, special effects movies where it's, like, super gross how they turn into werewolves. Fantastic. If you're into werewolf stuff, worth a watch.
According to what we do in the shadows, werewolves have really strong smelling piss. Yeah. So I think this woman who was not aware that they were around should probably get tested for COVID, because a lack of a sense of smell, as we all know, is a sign of COVID.
And she might have had toe issues too. We're not sure. Mm-hmm. Never took off those shoes. Maybe she did. Anyway. Great job. 2 points each for The Howling. And Chelsea, we're gonna go to you for round two. And that is, do you have a vague idea? Oop, just one moment. I'm going to pause and answer my phone, because it's probably food.
Food!
So, we were going into round two, and starting with Chelsea, with, do you have a vague idea about Bernoulli's Tube?
Yes, I do! I know about Bernoulli's Tube, actually. So, we have one in the living room. It's a tube, it's made of plastic, and it's got ridges on it. And when you spin it around, you think that it is creating friction with the air on the outside of the tube, and that is causing the sound to happen. And a lot of people have seen this thing. You know, you spin it around, it goes like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Yeah, I had one when I was a kid, or at least a couple of them. Yeah.
I work at the Denver Museum of Nature and Science, so we play with them a lot. But what's actually happening is that Bernoulli's principle is being applied, which is fluid flow speed to the second power over 2 plus acceleration due to gravity times fluid, I don't know, something equals constant, blah, 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 fill in the blank equals constant. And then basically what that means is that in the tube, you're pushing out a bunch of the air, and that's creating a vacuum, and it's pulling new air in from the bottom up, and thus creating this wind tunnel that is creating the sound on the ridges on the inside of the tube.
Which is why when you increase the speed that you are moving the tube, the pitch becomes higher as well. Yeah, awesome. Well done. Bryce, do you have anything to add about Bernoulli's Tube?
Bernoulli's Tube is a 1980 surfer movie about Thaddeus Bernoulli and his efforts to perfectly go through a wave tube to set a record for surfing.
I love it. I hope at some point Keanu Reeves appears just to shoot like 45 bullets straight into the air while screaming.
He does.
Very good. Well, because Chelsea was correct, 3 points. Bryce, I'm going to give you 2 points because you wrote a movie that I think we all want to watch.
Bernoulli's Tube.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, and it's probably like a series of Bernoulli's movies where it's like there's Bernoulli's Tube, and that's just about him like losing a joint that he has to go get. Like, it's a whole thing. I'm into it. We got a caper afoot. All right. Well, guys, it's time to play our first game. It's time for the Thunderdome. And this week in the Thunderdome, you have to tell me whether two kinds of mythical creatures known for their voice or noise would beat the other in a battle to the death. So, Bryce, we're going to start with you first. Competing in the Thunderdome this week are a group of sirens and a banshee. Who's going to win? Who's going to win in the Thunderdome?
That's a good question. Because if I remember, a banshee's scream is like piercing your ears, like it'll like destroy your hearing.
Yeah.
So it's a question of what sound comes first. I got to say, I think on the basis that sirens kind of seem to have a slow game, like they seem to pull you in slowly and slowly. So I feel like at the first sense of fear, that banshee is going to scream out and destroy their hearing. And I guess the sirens could keep singing even if they lost their hearing. They might get off pitch. It might not be as effective. I'm thinking the banshee's going to win.
All right. I think that's a very good, well-reasoned, well-reasoned. Chelsea, who do you think would win? You going to agree with Bryce? Disagree? How do you feel?
I got to say, I think I was convinced. Because my first thought was definitely like sirens, especially because the chorus of them. But yeah, because I think if a siren started singing to you, you would start to feel allured. But I think that the banshee could probably interrupt it so quick that they wouldn't get mesmerized and they would therefore destroy the sirens.
So it's just, it's like a chess game. It's all about a solid opening and that's all you need. Yeah. Very good. I mean, you're both absolutely correct. That was definitely the correct answer. 1 point each. Well done on the Thunderdome. And now we're going to go into round three. So all for right. Round three, Chelsea, it's your turn to go first. Do you have a vague idea about Allen Ginsberg?
Allen Ginsberg. Well, obviously a very influential poet. He famously wrote the poem Howl. Also kind of a problematic person because he also had sex with men that were underage quite often. but he, or and I guess, he wrote a lot of poems in the 1960s and was hanging out with Bob Dylan a lot. I saw him in footage with Bob Dylan one time.
Nice.
His hair is curly and quite floofy. And if he were here, he would be speaking much more eloquently than I am.
Wow. All right. I mean, that was very good. you might have noticed that I might have given you a science and a poetry question specifically for reasons. Bryce. Do you have a vague idea about Allen Ginsberg?
I think Chelsea hit a lot of good talking points about Allen Ginsberg. He, of course, was part of the Beat Poets and a big part of the Beat Generation. He wrote the poem Howl, as Chelsea mentioned, which got a lot of attention because it went to a censorship trial, a trial for profanity. Mm-hmm. And it was argued in court the merits of the poem based on its profanity. And a lot of the success of the poem was based on the fact that in trial it was found to be valid as a form of literature. It also brought a lot of validity to being gay, to the experience of being a homosexual in a time when people were experiencing shock treatment in response to being gay. Howl also was an ode to his friends around him, notably Neil Cassidy, who's another person of fame from the Beat Generation, is mentioned. The Mercury Cafe does an annual dinner or event in memory of Neil Cassidy.
He lived here in Denver.
Yeah.
On Larimer Street when Larimer was Skid Row.
Yeah, Neil Cassidy lived in Denver, so that was a big part of it. And he was also part of Allen Ginsberg's sexual awakening as like one of his first experiences experiencing intimacy with another man. Allen Ginsberg co-founded Naropa University with Ann Waldman, I believe. He wrote a lot of poems. He was published by City Lights Bookstore in San Francisco. Run by Ferlinghetti. Mm-hmm. And that's what they went to trial. And that's actually who went to trial was City Lights Bookstore, more so than Allen Ginsberg.
What is the line in Howl about balls?
Endless balls.
Endless balls.
So that's what part of the thing that's so great about it going to trial is there you have a courtroom full of people discussing the validity of endless balls.
Well, and one of the things that I remember in learning about that poem in high school and college was like, there's really not anything that is, I mean, there's nothing in there that's profane by any standards that I've experienced in my adult life. Like, I would never read that and go, wow, this is awful. You really have to walk back most of human history to a point of like, we didn't kill a bunch of people or racism or any of this. Like, none of these things happen. And then maybe it's kind of theoretically profane, but it's really, I don't know. I think it's really applicable to the moment we're in right now too, because it's just like, it's about screaming out about all the things that are still unjust and still don't make any sense.
It's also like the best kind of trolling. Like, yeah. My favorite kind of trolling is when people are not like direct assholes about things, but they just like put it out there in a subtle way.
Yeah, you find ways to. I mean, that's memes, for instance, can be a beautiful kind of trolling, because they don't have to say the thing directly. They can be, you know, an allusion to the thing, which is, yeah. I mean, Ginsberg did a beautiful job with that. Bryce, did you have anything else to add on Allen Ginsberg?
I think I could, but I think I'm good.
Okay. All right. I mean, do you have a personal connection to Howell? Do you remember when you first read it?
Howell's really important to me. I keep it in check, as Chelsea said, like his judgment around younger boys and lots of terrible things there.
It's kind of a problem with all men in art previous to last year. Like, Picasso has problems with underage girls. Bowie, I mean, all of these people had stuff where it's like, shit, not good.
Dolly was a Nazi sympathizer.
Yeah, I mean, qualifying it doesn't make it okay, but it sort of becomes this thing where it's like, well, I don't know. It becomes that issue of how can we separate the art from the artist to the extent that we can, to salvage what is good, and I don't know. Human history is fucked.
Yeah, well said. And yeah, pretty much any artist in history, male artist especially, is... got some details you probably don't want to know about them,
yeah.
Or that you have to acknowledge about them is probably a better way to say it. But the movie Howl was really important to me. I watched it, and that's where I learned a lot about Allen Ginsberg and the trial. And he spoke at length about your authentic voice, and I feel like watching that movie was a big turning point for me, like going full force into poetry and finding my voice. So, I really love that movie, and it was really important for me to watch that and go through that experience.
Right on. Yeah. I mean, I still think part of the beauty of it is that it was one of the first times that I understood that like poetry and language could be, an effective sort of way to push for change, like an effective sort of way to like shake all of society to wake up. Because it doesn't have to be just the novel length form. It can be, Howl is a long poem. So it's not like it's a short thing, but I mean, it's no William Carlos Williams certainly, but it's, you know, it's still poetry. So yeah, great job, guys. That was beautiful. Bryce, I'm going to give you 2 points. Chelsea, 1 point. And we're going to move on to
so we're
round.
I think you're beating.
I think you're still up by one. Yeah.
Glad this is a quiz of an addition.
So we're going to go into round four, and we'll start with you, Bryce. Do you have a vague idea about Howl's Moving Castle?
Oh, yeah. I do have a vague idea. Howl's Moving Castle is an anime film.
Very good.
It's kind of a fairy tale vantage point in how it's told. As the title indicates, there's a very like ship-like castle in the movie that travels around and is able to move. And I believe the pieces are always in motion as well. And there's some sort of scarecrow character. I watched it a long time ago, and that's about all I remember about it.
Great. Yeah, very good, very good. Chelsea, do you know, do you have a vague idea about Howl's Moving Castle?
I'm going to guess that it's from Japan.
Very
and
good.
I thought that the castle had chicken legs.
Like maybe. Baba Yaga's hut?
Yes, that's what I was thinking of. Baba Yaga. That's what I was thinking of. but I don't know Howl well, but I do wish him well. And I send him my sincerest regrets that I'm so unfamiliar with him and his castle.
All right. Now, I mean, you guys both covered it pretty well. I mean, it's a wonder. It's an animated movie. It's a Japanese animated movie that came out in 2004. It's set in a fictional kingdom where magic and 20th century technology are kind of merged together. And it's all against the backdrop of war with another kingdom. The moving castle is effectively a massive ship, that flies through the sky. And we follow a character named Sophie, who, has been kind of, she's turned into an old woman by a witch. She confronts the wizard named Howl, and gets caught up in this resistance again in the war. The cool thing is, so it's a Miyazaki film, and it was written mainly because of his opposition to the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003. So it's just one of those things where, like, and this is the sort of thing, like, I feel like I saw this and didn't know what it was about, and then I went back and learned more about it. But yeah, so it's, you know, it's basically like anti-war themes and then old age and, you know, feminism as well. So yeah, it's great one. It's something to watch if you haven't seen it, either, you know, if you haven't seen it, Chelsea, or if the listener hasn't seen it.
Isn't it an American movie of some kind? I feel like it's Wizard of Oz or something that it kind of pulls in like some themes from.
I think it does have Wizard of Oz kind of parallels because there are, you know, it is kind of like Stranger in a Strange Land, wizards kind of, you're seeking something that you don't know what you're seeking, right? Like Dorothy kind of doesn't know that she wants to go home yet because she's just happy to be there. And then mm-hmm. she figures out. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's brilliant because it's ultimately a movie about compassion and the value of that. And I think, especially in our current climate, but every day we need to remember that that's key. So wonderful work. Bryce, 2 points. Chelsea, 1 point.
Ah, that's fair.
And it's time for our second game.
Yes.
It's time to play Fuck, Marry, Kill.
Oh, God.
So get excited. This week on Fuck, Marry, Kill, you have to decide between Thurston Howell III, the wealthy man who was on Gilligan's Island, C. Thomas Howell, the actor who was popular in the 80s but was also in the film Soul Man, where he was in blackface. Not a good movie, but his last name is Howell. And the third option is The Edge, the guitarist for U2, whose real name is David Howell Evans. So I will put it to Bryce first. Bryce, who are you going to fuck? Who are you going to marry? And who are you going to kill?
All right. Well, I think I'm going to kill the blackface guy.
Yeah, okay. That's probably the best, right? That's good.
My original thought was to marry the super wealthy guy off the island, was to kill him, but that's a little harsh. I think I'm going to marry him and hope to reallocate some of that wealth in a good way.
Okay, and, very good.
Obviously, fuck the rock star. I'm going to fuck Edge.
Yeah, I mean, he'll have his beanie on. He'll be playing his guitar, soloing all the time. It'll be great. Okay, good job. Very good. Chelsea.
Yeah, I think I'm going to obviously kill the guy from the 80s with blackface, whatever. Fuck that guy.
All right, yeah, C. Thomas Howell is out.
Yeah. But although he might be hot, he's a movie star, but who cares? And now we have the guy from Gilligan's Island. As I recall, he had like a kind of like older dad bod kind of look, and he kind of had this like sexy sophistication.
He was definitely not a bad looking older man.
Yeah, I'm into that kind of thing. So I think I'm gonna fuck him.
Okay.
And then the U2 guy, that guy, I bet he is loaded. Now, it would be very annoying to be married to someone who plays music that you don't like. But, you know, I also think he probably has a very extravagant life. And I think that Bono, even though he's annoying in a lot of ways, he did a lot of AIDS advocacy, which is kind of cool.
Oh, yeah, so yeah.
Maybe he runs in good circles.
Yeah, you'd probably be able to, at very least, help Bono with something that you want to do, or meet people who Bono knows who, you know, yeah, I think there are a lot of advantages there. Good work. I think that's perfect. Bryce, I'm going to give you 1 point and Chelsea 2 points.
I think that's fair.
I feel like you're very generous and I'm happy with it.
That's the way the game is played. It is completely nonsensical and that's why it works. Great job. So now, from the makers of Pomme ou Pomme de Terre.
Oh, yes.
It's La Chose Francais Arbitraire, that's the arbitrary French thing, and the only thing that's French about it is the name. So, the question that I will throw at each of you, totally arbitrary question, Chelsea, you'll go first, is how do you feel about dogs howling at emergency sirens? Like an ambulance goes by or a fire truck and you hear that mournful bail of a hound. How does that make you feel?
Oh, it gives me a sentimental feeling. I think that there is a lot of sorrow in it, because I think that dogs in general just long for each other. And I wish we could just open all of our doors and just let the dogs go outside, and that they wouldn't get hit by cars, and that they could just run around in packs like they do in Mexico. And the fact that all of our poor dogs don't get to play with each other all the time makes me very sad. So I feel like that howling is like a longing for its pack. And then there's also the layer of like the sirens going by, and like someone is hurt and in danger, and like dogs love humans. And so
and the
like,
animals that, always know.
They have an instinct for things. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
Very That's good.
There's sorrow in it.
I love it. I love it. Bryce, what do you think? What do you like? What do you feel? How do you feel about those dogs howling at those emergency sirens?
I'm against it.
How dare they?
I'm just kidding. I like it with the howling. There were several times where ambulances went by, mm-hmm. or around 8 or other times a day, and it was the first time I really noticed even how much an ambulance sounds like a howl. It is very similar in tone, so I thought that was cool. And I think Chelsea hit a lot of the things I feel about it as well, about the sentimentality and dogs being very feeling. It was just kind of like, all of it reminds me of my friend Catherine, who kind of got me on that same page, because whenever an ambulance would pass by, and she was not a Christian person herself, but she would do a sign of the cross, just acknowledging that there was potentially something very serious happening inside of that ambulance. So I think it's cool that dogs have that same instinct. And I think it's cool that we pull over not only so the car can get by, but as like a sense of like slowing down to kind of process the fragility of life in a way.
Yeah, that's, I don't know if a lot of people think about it at all. I think a lot of people probably just feel inconvenienced, but I would hope that we could get that to take off, you know, where you'd see this emergency happening and go, oh, I need to think outside myself for a moment. I mean, that's a level of empathy that we all need. Also, yeah, dogs are wonderful. I mean, it would be great. It would be great if Toby and Rocket could just go outside and run around and come back. But, you know, it's not safe out there in the city. But they always know. They always know when you don't feel good. And they always know when something's wrong. I mean, that's the beauty of that kind of just perfect sort of compassion. So, yeah, very good. I'm going to give you both 2 points. That was great. I wanted to add that when the howl at 8 o'clock was most prominent, because I feel like it's tapered off a little bit over the last month or so, our dogs would definitely like get riled up when people, you know, we'd have the windows open, people would be howling, they'd be barking and everything. And it was really interesting because it is kind of like, it's just like this wholesale communal connection thing. That's really neat. We need more of that. And I think that's why you guys did it, because it wasn't just purely out of honoring any particular group, as I understand, but it was kind of about like, hey, we all need to validate our existence, because we're in a weird time. And if you don't do that, you get real crazy.
Yeah, I think that a big part of it was that people had feelings that they didn't have words for. And so they just wanted to express it in some way. So howling is this like pre-verbal kind of expression of feeling.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, cause what we cry when we're born, and that's like the only way that we have to communicate everything.
Yeah.
And a howl can do a whole lot. I mean, I know that, you know, there's a lot of catharsis to be had from just say screaming into a pillow if you're upset about something, right? Like just having some way to, And we're really kind of a what is it? It's sort of just a waspy society still, where you're not really expected to. You should not share emotion, right? Like you're not expected to blow up. You're expected to bottle it up and keep it cool, and that's hard. I think everybody's, you know, everybody's wired for communication, not for containment.
Yeah, well said.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a form of decolonization to express emotions, express how you feel.
Yeah, that's interesting, because especially in the light of the protests that have been going on for Black Lives Matter, and you know, that sort of the the immense pushback that has come, at least initially, from police departments and even from people who kind of don't get what the whole movement is about, seems to be kind of exactly that, right? It's a resistance to, like, no, don't express yourself. Expressing yourself is unpeaceful. You need to be, you need to just continue to not express yourself like everyone else and hope for the best. And that's stupid because, you know, we have to push. We have to express, because otherwise what's the point of living?
I think that that's something that a lot of white people are really learning right now too, which is really cool, is that, like, staying out of it is not necessarily a good solution to solving the problem.
Yeah, no, I mean, we kind of all have our part to play. Like, not every single person is going to be out there, like, standing in between, you know, between cops and the front line of a protest. Like, not everybody's suited for that. But we all have some sort of skill, and we all have, there are so many jobs to do, whether it's, you know, making phone calls, writing members of city council or state senate or whatever. There are so many valuable ways to contribute to it and to just kind of understand. Like, we've all been mistreated at some point or another, whether it's as egregious as our friends of color have been for generation upon generation. And so we should be able to at least empathize that much and speak up. Talk about how that sucks, because it does, and it's wrong.
Yeah, and talk to your family members.
Yes, I mean, that's a big thing too. It's just talking to people who are related to you, because they might actually listen to you. They're not going to listen to a person on Facebook who's like, your post is dumb, you know?
You're certainly not going to listen to Black people.
No, so yeah, and there's, you know, also, like, racism has all sorts of different shapes and sizes, which is why it's so complicated to do away with.
Absolutely.
But yeah, great job on Les Choses Français Arbitraire. 2 points each.
Maybe all.
And now it's time to go into the final topic. So, Chelsea, we'll start with you on the final topic. And this week, I'm going to ask you if you have a vague idea about Nick Fury's Howling Commandos.
Shit. I didn't want to go first because I'm actually really bad at cultural references. But Nick Fury's Howling Commandos is a brigade of men who are anti-underwear, and they generally gather on rooftops, and you know, they just howl in commando, and they're really proud of it. I think that that's a big part of it. They're really trying to reconnect with nature. Sometimes they do actually go out to the mountains, hug trees and howl. But the main point is, like, no underwear in this brigade. And they all have matching pink berets that they wear as part of their uniform, I guess.
I love it. Are they wearing pink berets and no other clothing? Or are they, like, pink berets and clothing but just no underwear? I just want to be clear of the picture we're painting.
Yeah. You can wear a t-shirt with your favorite band.
Okay, or, so yeah, you know, Donald ducking a little bit.
Picture, yeah. Little flip-flops is fine too.
I love it. I love it. Combat flip-flops.
They're
brilliant.
Very welcoming. You can do it today.
Bryce, Nick Fury's Howling Commandos?
You know, I know a lot about him, but Chelsea said every single thing I know about Nick Fury's Howling Commandos. The only thing I'll add is that Nick Fury is a character from the Marvel Universe. With an eye patch, and I don't really fully understand his role. It's probably been 5 to 10 years since I've seen a Marvel movie, but I would wager Nick Fury's Howling Commandos is a brigade that he assembles in the name of trying to fight evil in the world.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong at all. Very, very good. So yeah, Nick Fury is, he's a Marvel character famously portrayed by Samuel L. Jackson in all of the movies that have happened in the last 5 to 8 years. So his Howling Commandos is kind of a weird science fiction fantasy sidetrack comic book series that includes, so he has Frank, who is basically Frankenstein's monster. There is Gorilla Man, who is a man trapped inside a gorilla's body. There is a living mummy. There is a guy who was a commanding officer of Area 13, so just kind of a regular so-and-so. There is a vampire and a a werewolf whose name is Warwolf, and a zombie. And these are the members of Nick Fury's Howling Commandos. So it's just one of those weird comic book sidetracks. And yeah, I just thought it was funny because I was like, oh, there's actually like an like if you had an army with a werewolf in it, like that seems like a pretty legit advantage, right?
Also, I would say a few of those creatures are probably not wearing underwear, to my point.
Oh, yeah. I don't think, I mean, does a mummy wear underwear, even if they're just wrapped in bandages? I think they're probably still going commando. So that's yep. That's accurate.
Mummies without undies.
Mummies without undies. Oh, my God. Okay, that's the episode title for this week.
I love it.
Gotta record that so I don't forget. I love it.
The nonprofit that this episode is raising funds for.
Yeah. Yep, this episode is dedicated to Mummies Without Undies. It's a San Francisco-based nonprofit for mothers of tech startup guys, I guess.
Yeah.
Great job. Bryce, I'm going to give you 2 points because you knew the Marvel tie-in, and Chelsea, 1 point. So now I need to add up the scores real quick. So let's just go ahead and talk amongst yourselves for a moment while I do some basic addition.
Oh, I think I lost.
Oh,
I think you lost my 1 point.
I think you did too.
Oh my God, it's this lucky Hawaiian shirt that you're wearing, you bastard.
Yep, should have worn a lucky Hawaiian shirt.
This is evil.
You went with Banksy, and I don't know how that affects it, but.
It's bad luck, is what it is.
The thing about Banksy, wearing a Banksy shirt, is someone else is going to steal credit for what you do.
Aha! Uh-huh. So true.
Yep.
The thing about wearing a Hawaiian shirt is that people are just going to want to give you drinks with little umbrellas in them.
Oh, yeah. That was the thing today. We were at Kaiser Permanente, and a lady was like, "You look like you need a drink with an umbrella in it."
That seems like a good thing for a healthcare professional to diagnose.
Yeah, it was nice. And then she kind of like did the like, "I hope that didn't come across wrong way," and she's like, "It's a really nice shirt. I really like your shirt." I was like, "Oh, thanks. I could use a drink with an umbrella in it. Sounds good."
We went to Kaiser Permanente because I have a huge bee sting on my thigh.
How did you get bee stung?
We have bees.
We keep bees.
Oh.
And we don't know, we're learning. And this was a good life lesson because we checked on them at night, and at night they're very active. They sleep only a few hours a day.
Interesting.
And nobody is out looking for pollen at night, and so that means that everybody is home. And so we lifted the lid and we were like, "Whoa, there's so many bees. They've made so many babies." And then they were like, "What the fuck are you doing shining a flashlight in our house?" And they were not happy.
They were alarmed. Yeah. Did you ever see the bees Tim and Eric short sketch?
Nope.
There's like a Tim and Eric Awesome Show, Great Job, which was an Adult Swim like series for a while in the early 2000s. But they have one about bees. That's very funny. I encourage you to look it up and watch it. It makes no sense, but that is their style of comedy, is to be intentionally obscure.
Cool.
So I have the scores added up, and I triple checked this because I, you know, you sounded so certain that you lost, but it's a tie at 16 points. So congratulations to both of you for winning the show this evening.
Hell yeah.
So I'll start. Chelsea, let's start with you. Is there anything that you would like to plug that you want the listeners to know about, be active into, etc.? Like anything you want to talk about, the floor is yours.
Oh, well, I'm the creative director for Soul Stories, which is an organization that uses dialogue and storytelling to explore the human experience. So we do all kinds of stuff. We do dialogue-based events where people come together and talk about stuff.
Ooh.
We also do storytelling events on various topics, things like gentrification, consent, stuff like that. And then we also have a podcast that is run by Danny Mazur. And we do a bunch of cool stuff. You can also come and say hi to me at the Denver Museum of Nature and Science when we open.
Great. What's the name of the podcast? Is it Soul Stories also?
Yep, the Soul Stories podcast.
Great. Yeah, I'm going to look that one up myself. That sounds really interesting. I love those kinds of conversations about stuff that we kind of don't know how to talk about, or at least we don't talk about publicly, because it's way easier to just talk about, you know, new products or cake toppings. I don't know what people talk about anymore. I've been inside too long. Thank you for being on the show, Chelsea. Really great plug. Bryce, anything that you would like to plug?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that my press, South Broadway Press, which is the same umbrella thing as South Broadway Ghost Society, is releasing a collection of poems called Thought for Food. There's three people in it that I want to mention. Nate Regolia has a poem in the collection. Has a poem in the collection, and I have a poem in the collection. And the project is an anthology of poems from mostly local writers, but also writers from all around the world. And it is raising funds for Denver Food Rescue, which is a local nonprofit that rescues food and then provides it to folks in need of food. As I'm sure a lot of us are aware, there's a lot of food that's less than perfect, that's thrown away or not salvaged. So they look for that kind of food and partner with other food groups in order to gather that food and then bring it to the door of people who need food. So I'm a big fan of their organization because they're locally based, and there's a lot of issues around accessibility where if you're someone who's struggling for food, the last thing you need to do is probably, you know, possibly take a bus an hour to go wait in line to spend your day getting food. So I'm really impressed with their organization. And I think especially right now, that's something important. We are raising funds for them. So far, we've raised $3,200. Our goal was $3,000. So you can still support the fundraiser, or at any time, if you do want to buy the anthology, you can, and 60% of that fund will go to Denver Food Rescue.
Right on. Yeah, I mean, I have to say thank you, because you were so kind to include my haiku rant sandwich that I submitted, because I'm sure we've all read the articles about the excessive amounts of food that gets wasted just because the supply chain has been slightly interrupted due to the COVID-19 pandemic, and you know, farmers just like dumping food out and pouring out milk and all this other stuff. And it's like, we have people who are starving. Like, I don't know. It enraged me that we couldn't just figure out a way to mobilize anything on a grand scale, because Denver Food Rescue is remarkable. But you know, something on a nationwide scale to make use of food that's usable. It's a tragedy of our leadership is what I'm going to say. But yeah, thank you for including me in that. And it is super awesome. I can't wait to get my copy. And yeah, I always nice to support, you know, local organizations that do incredible and important things. Great. Guys, this was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your evening to do the show with me. Chelsea, thank you for being on the first time. I hope you had enough fun that you might come back in the future.
It was so fun. I love games like this. Thank you.
Such a great show.
Wonderful. So, you know, as things get a little more calm, we might try recording in the studio again. We can do the masks and everything, and like everybody's sitting pretty much 6 feet apart anyway. But you know, one way or another, I'm gonna have you back on the show because you've been a great guest, and I like having a science mind on the show because it expands my opportunities for questions as well. Bryce, thank you for coming back as always. Like, this is like your fourth time on.
I think it's fourth or fifth time. It's yeah. Always fun.
And you tied this time. Have you won previously? I can't remember if you have.
I don't think I've won before.
Okay, well, I mean, so you at least half won this week.
Who won the 1 year? Did you win the 1 year anniversary?
I think I barely did because someone gave me like 1,000 points at the end. Because poor Bryce got like forced to sit the whole episode and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait to read his question, which thank you for doing that too. I mean, the support is incredible. And I love all the work that we've been able to do together as writers in the Denver community. And then just, you know, as fun, creative, interesting people. So, yeah.
Well, likewise, Nate. It's always great working with you and having fun with you.
Yeah, I keep hoping you're going to put together a collection of sci-fi poems so Spaceboy can publish it, because I'd like something weird like that, and I'm sure you could deliver it.
Oh, yeah, that could be cool. I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah, yeah.
It was cool to see Addison's collection. It was really good.
Have you read it?
Yeah. I read it, and I really enjoyed it. And some of the work in there was also on Ghost Society, so it was cool to see it come
together. Yeah, you guys had published some stuff. Birdie had published something. There were a few places where some of those pieces had appeared, but I mean, I was blown away. I'm really so happy with that collection because it is, it's powerfully futuristic and innately human at the same time. And that's, I think, the best thing about sci-fi. So yeah, guys, thank you again so much. Listeners, thank you for listening. If you like this show, please subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can check out our social media. We have a Facebook group. It's called The Vague Idea Podcast Online Group Thing. We play Pamu Pam de Terre online there pretty much every week. We also have Twitter and Instagram, which you can find using your fingers and basic understanding of how the internet works. And yeah, please check out, check out Bryce's work, check out Chelsea's work, check out the Soul Stories events and podcast, and support Food for Thought. And Black Lives Matter also. Like, make a donation, do your part, donate to bail funds, whatever. Just be part of the solution. So yeah, thank you guys so much for listening. Be good to each other and have a great whatever time it is where you are right now. Bye bye.
Bye.
Bye, thank you.
A Vague Idea is written and produced by me, Nate Regolia, with Shannon Page, and sometimes John Perros. Information about topics often come from Wikipedia, so hey, why not donate a bit to that? Sound effects are Creative Commons public domain. If you like this podcast, tell a few people, and subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. And if you happen to like reading science fiction, check out the small press I started with my friend Sean Grokowski. You can find Spaceboy Books at readspaceboy.com.